But and I just want to say thank you to Gravitz and Pilatowski for having me here, and thank you to everyone for coming. I know it's late, and it's a whole night of your week. I just thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
And my name, for those of you that don't know me, is Michael Vigoda. I'm Robertson Willis' favorite son-in-law. What we're going to be doing, Be'ezrat Hashem, a series of classes. We're going to be going through a book called Sha'arim B'Tfilah. And what this book, I first encountered this book when I was in Yeshiva in Aish, and it's mind-blowing. It's probably one of the most learned books in this area today. It's literally life-changing. Because I think when we go to school, prayer is an area that we just don't get a lot of... we don't get taught much about it. And even if you send a child to a frum school, and you give them like a little pair of tzitzis, you know, and the kippah, and they start learning aleph bet, and they start learning to read, and as they get bigger, they start learning chumash, and as they go up in grades. Hello. We've got enough chairs. We're going to need two more chairs.
Sorry.
That's okay. As people, there's a chair here, so maybe we just need one more for you, Rebecca. As people get older, when they go to a school, they start the Chumash and Mishnah and Gomorrah, and you see them getting bigger and learning, and the learning is evolving, but their prayer stays at a very, very low level. Like, it's like their little pair of tzitzit, it's they're big, but they're wearing the same little pair of tzitzit, if that tzitzit represents prayer. And we can go through our whole lives, and whereas we're learning more, and even chesed, we're doing chesed, you know, a chesed project, which is amazing, we're inspiring each other and giving each other ideas and chizuk. But tefillah, prayer, is the one area we just don't get a lot of input. And for me, when I was in yeshiva and going through this material, it was like eye-opening, it was amazing. So this is what I hope to go through with you tonight and over the next few weeks. And I'm going to tell you in one moment, this is just a bit of an introduction, we're going to start jumping in. We're going to go through the first of these 13 facets of tefillah. Just like light can be broken down into seven colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Tefillah, prayer, can be broken down into 13 different dimensions. And we're not taught about these. This is what we're going to go into. And the first one we're going to go into is called Bitsur, which I'll translate and go. We'll jump into it in just a moment, just as an introduction about tefillah in general. There is a principle. And the principle is this. Imagine heaven and earth like a house. And heaven is the attic, and earth is the main part of the house. And all these brachas are in the attic. All these brachas are there to come down to us. Health and income and various different brachas that we need. Even if it's coming to us, even if it's been decreed for us, it cannot come into the house unless the doors are open from the attic. And the Torah says the way to open those doors is through tefillah. If we do not use tefillah, prayer, all the blessings that are coming to us, even if they've been designated for us, Hashem has promised them, we've done something to merit them, they cannot come to us without being prayed for. I'll give you a few examples from the Chumash.
Without being grateful.
Well, grateful we're going to see comes under Rina, which is going to be something we'll get to in the third week. But I'm just saying without being prayed for. Okay, and Rina.
Or being
prayed for. Excuse me. Prayed for. But being grateful will be a part of it. We'll see that. In the Chumash, as an example, it says Adam Arishon, Adam the first man, when he was created, you imagine there are trees and there are flowers and shrubs. It says when he was created, all there was brown earth. What about the Garden of Eden? It's Rashi says, until Adam, which he got from the Oral Torah, until he was created and he prayed for rain, nothing had grown. Because even though Hashem decided to make the world and create everything that was needed, no bracha can come into the world, and rain is a bracha, and this growth is a bracha, unless it's been prayed for. So Hashem had to, according to the way he operates the world, wait for Adam to pray until all the trees and flowers could grow. Or another example. Abraham has promised he's going to become a great nation. He, through Yitzchak, Isaac, his son. So Isaac knows he's going to have children, he's going to have children, he's going to have children, he's going to become a great nation. And yet we see in the Chumash, he's davening, he's praying with his wife, Rivka, and they're praying and praying for years for children. Why are they praying? Just wait till the right time. But there's a principle. The Torah says, even though it was coming to them, it cannot come into the world until those doors in the attic have been opened and it can come down. And therefore, Yitzhak had to daven. He had to pray. That's what it says. One more example given. When the Jews were in Egypt, and a specific amount of time was designated for them to be in Egypt. It says in Rashi, it says Radu, they went down to Egypt, and Radu is the numerical value of 210 years because they had to be there 210 years. And when that time came, it was time for their redemption. But we don't see them being redeemed until finally it says they called out to Hashem, and then straight away we see the redemption start after that. But until they prayed for it, even though the time had come, it couldn't come because that's the way God operates the world. So it's really just from a perspective of having our brachas come down to us, without even talking about our relationship with God, but just from a very, very basic perspective, it's worthwhile looking at the topic of tefillah, because that's how everything good that we want in our lives is going to come to us. Even if it's coming to us, it's not going to come to us except through tefillah. And sometimes if it's not coming to us, we can still get it through tefillah.
Now ask a question. With the prayer in there.
Yes.
Does that apply then to Moshiach as well, even though Hashem said this is how many years?
Okay. I'm so pleased you asked that question. I just tell you quickly. Rav Chaim Vital, the student of the Arizal, a few hundred years ago, said that the main focus of our generation has got to be tefillah, prayer. Even though Talmud Torah, they say, is equal to all the other mitzvahs, and Talmud Torah will bring many, many merits, there are so many merits that the Jewish people have amassed, and so many people have died, Kiddush Hashem, they've sanctified Hashem's name, there's so many sources of merits, but until we use tefillah to open those gates, so to speak, the Mashiach can't come. So he says it. Although there are many, many fundamental mitzvahs that we need to be doing, it's a mitzvah of tefillah that is going to facilitate everything coming to us. So, that
Hashem said 6,000 years.
So even though Hashem said a certain time, we're going to have to pray for it to come at that time. So, just before we jump into the first one, just to make the point, these 13 aspects of tefillah, so there are 13 words for, tefillah means prayer. The 13 words for prayer in the Chumash, 13 different words, and in Hebrew there's no synonyms, meaning there are no words, two different words, if they're different, have to mean different things. And so various different sources go through and explain each of those different types of tefillah, and this one applies to when you're in a desperate situation, when there's no hope, and this one applies to when you're overjoyed and feeling full of bracha, full of blessing, and each one is applies to different scenarios. And a person might say, well, gee, I'll learn a few, and at least I have a few under my belt, and then that'll be good. That's it, yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but say this. You said there are 13 different types of words,
yes,
for prayer. Or are there 13 different kinds of prayer?
Well, because there are 13 different words for prayer, and each word is a different expression of prayer. There are 30 different ways, types, facets, dimensions of prayer. And as you learn through it, you'll see what we mean. A person might say, well, I'll learn two or three and that'll be good. Well, that's, two or three is good. But it's kind of like saying, I'll learn the laws of Shabbat and I'll learn the laws of Kashrut, kosher. And that's good. And it will be good because 1/7 of one's life, one's in Shabbat. And every time we eat, we need to know about kosher. But there's, what about raising our kids? There's Torah on raising our kids. And what about every other facet of our lives? So each type of prayer will deal with different facets of our lives and deal with things. And it may not be possible to get something one way, but it will be possible through another aspect of prayer. That's why it's good to see this spectrum. The goal isn't to look through the words of the Shemona Esrei. We're not going to be using a Siddur. It's to see the spectrum of prayer and the options available to us. And it's very, very down to earth and practical and applicable. And I don't think it's possible to go through this and not change and not grow. So that's what we're going to be doing. That was my introduction. And now we're going to start. So the first way, and next week Be'ezrat Hashem we'll do three. But just to do the first way tonight, I'm going to look at my clock. I am. Okay. The first way is called Bitsur. Bitsur means a sincere request. Beit Tzadi Vav Resh. Bitsur. It means a sincere request. And I'm on page 5 of my notes already. And I've only got to page 8. And 8 is like really a little bit. So I've got 1, 2, 3 and a bit little pages. And I'm going to give examples and stories and different dimensions. And everything I'm going to be trying to do over the next 3 and a bit pages is to give across one main point, which every other facet of prayer is going to be based upon. Every other of the 12 facets of prayer after this one. That was my
good.
A sincere request. But that's just the little term I'm giving it, the translating as. But what I'm trying to say is, for the next 3 and a bit pages of my notes, I'm trying to clarify one clear point. Okay? So if you Be'ezrat Hashem, at the end of the next, we've got half an hour from now, or maybe 25 minutes. At the end of this 20 minutes, 25 minutes, we're going to have a clarity on this one point. And everything else that we're going to learn about, this is the foundation of it. Okay? Bitsu is called. But you know what? I actually drew a picture for each of these 13 things. Maybe I'll bring it next week. And it said the picture kind of expresses what the prayer is about. Okay? Because I work that way. I'm visual. I'm an artist. You know, like I'm this famous artist. You know, maybe not, but I am I like to draw. Okay. So we're starting now. Bitsu. Someone came to me. Someone I know. I'm talking to this guy, and he likes dogs, and he likes saving dogs that are going to be like, are dogs impounded, or is that cars that are impounded? Dogs. They're going to be impounded, and like. I don't know if they're killed or whatever, but he likes to save them and take care of them. He has a lot of dogs. And he was telling me that he loves it when they get fed and they get healed. And he loves it. He just loves seeing them eating their food and their tails wagging. And he just knows they're happy. They have everything they need. They have a shelter and they have friends and they have their food and everything's okay. And I was thinking when this guy was talking to me, like, it's... In a way, I don't know, but from an animal's perspective, when they have their shelter and their friends and their food, they are kind of okay. And I was thinking that when he told me this, which is one evening, that supper, okay, I was stressing about, I have deadlines because I am an artist and I do illustrate stuff, and I have deadlines that I have to get things done by, and I was stressing, and then my son came to me and he said he has to finish a project that I know is going to take about 2 or 3 hours and he can't do it without me. And it's like, oh, he's got this, and he's stressing about this, and I've got to help him, and I've got to do my own work. And someone sent me an email about, I'm involved with this program, or I don't know what you call it, an organization called Devote, people who are attacked in Israel or killed. It helps them or their families. And someone sent me about this man who was killed by Palestinians in a very gruesome way, and now he's got a widow and 7 kids. And I was like, really quite distraught about that. And I was thinking to myself, look, we can eat and we can have a full stomach and we're not content like that dog, because our lives are different. If you think about the needs in your life, even if you're full, you'll have all sorts of different needs. I just jotted a few down. A person will have health issues, I'm just saying, potentially. Financial issues, work issues, relationships issues. We want our kids to be healthy, and we want our kids to have good teachers and good influences and good friends, and we want them to grow, and we want ourselves to grow in different ways. We have so many different areas of our life that are pressing and that could be stressing us out or causing us problems. And we have needs. Why did Hashem make it that we have needs? No matter who you are, even billionaires have needs, because money doesn't solve all the problems. Why did Hashem make it that we have needs? So Rav Yitzhak Hutner used to say, the purpose of prayer is not to get us out of trouble. The purpose of trouble is to get us into prayer. I'll say it again. The purpose of prayer is not to get us out of trouble. The purpose of trouble is to get us into prayer. Hashem could just give us everything we need. But Hashem sets up the world and sets up our specific lives in such a way that we have specific scenarios that we are going to be tested in different areas. And this is the thing. Hashem gives us a mitzvah in the Torah. One of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, the Ramban explains that it's in the Sefer Chinuch, and this is a mitzvah from the Torah. It says, Hashem says, when you have a need, when you feel that you have a need, pray to me. That is what the Ramban says. It's one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. If you have a need, pray to me. So even if a person has prayed that morning, let's say they prayed Shacharit or they prayed Shemona Esrei, they would still have an obligation when they have a stressful situation, that they've got to get somewhere and they can't find a parking space, or they're worrying about their parent or their sibling or their friend or their work. As soon as they realize something that is difficult in their lives, they have an obligation to pray. That there's a mitzvah to pray. That's the way Hashem set the world up, okay? That he gives us a scenario, and then he gives an obligation to turn to him and pray to help in that scenario. Okay? This is step one. Step two is this, okay? A principle in the way Hashem operates the world. And this is all coming from Sha'arim B'Tefillah, which is based on all the books. This is a fundamental principle in Torah, but I think a lot of people don't know this, okay? Hashem makes it as if he doesn't know the trouble that we have. And I'm going to explain exactly what this means, okay? Even though Hashem knows everything, he sees everything, he knows everything, Hashem operates with us in such a way as if he doesn't know what the problem is that we're experiencing. So, for example, you'll see in Tehillim, there's a famous Tehillim that people say, often we say the Tehillim number, the Psalm number 121 and 130. So in Psalm number 130, David HaMelech, King David says, Hashem, Shema b'koli, tiyena aznecha kashavu l'kho tachnunai. Hashem, listen to my voice and let your ears hear the prayers that I'm praying to you. Because David HaMelech, King David, knew this principle and he lived by this principle. I'm not going to operate in such a way that I hope that you kind of see what's going on, because I know that you set up a scenario for me. You gave me a mitzvah to turn to you and to pray to you, and that's how you want to operate. You want me to turn to you and to pray to you. You don't want to have it that you just kind of take care of every single need as soon as it comes up. So, for example, I had to drive somewhere the other day. I'm going to explain this. I had to drive somewhere the other day. It's quite far. And someone else was going there. And we ended up starting to go together. And it isn't someone that I really know that well. But I was talking to them, and they were talking to me, and they're telling me how business was difficult in their life. Business was difficult. And January was good for them, but we're in February. And February was really, really hard. And they're telling me how hard it was and various other problems once you start with one thing and kind of... And I said, wow, that sounds really, really like an ordeal that you're going through, the way he was speaking. He was really emotional. He said, it sounds like a really hard time. He said, yeah, I hope things get better. I hope things get better. And I'm like, I said to him, you hope things get better? He said, yeah, I really hope things improve. I said, did you ever think of praying to Hashem, Jewish guy? He said, well, you know, Hashem knows what's going on. Like, it must be I did something bad, and maybe I can fix it, you know? That's what he said to me, okay? I'm just telling you what he said. And I proceeded for the rest of the trip to talk to him about trees. Okay? Because I had to explain to him this principle that I'm talking about now, and trees really conveys a message. Because you think, what are you talking about, trees? Okay. Show something amazing. So I have one of those minds, I look at things and I think, why is it like that? Like, for example, I see a tree and I see branches coming out, and I know trees give us oxygen and they are good for places for little things to live in it. And you can get fruit from some trees and they're good for fuel. But I think, why did Hashem make it that there's a trunk? And then there are branches. And then there are branches from those branches. And then there are twigs. Like, why is it that wherever you look, there are trunks with branches and plus branches? And why is it? Does it have to be that shape? So thinking about it, a tree is an amazing thing. The Torah is compared to a tree. The Torah is compared to a tree. It's a tree of life. Why is the Torah compared to a tree? And it says, a tzaddik is compared to a tree. Ki adam eitz tzaddik. A man is like a tree of the field. Which makes sense. If the Torah is like a tree, then a tzaddik that epitomizes the Torah should be like a tree. So what does that mean? The Torah is like a tree and the tzaddik is like a tree. What does that mean? So Rav Sadia got on from before the Rambam. He was maybe more than 1,000 years ago. He talks about how there are different mitzvahs in the Torah. And there's like a hierarchy of mitzvahs. For example, there'll be a mitzvah, and there'll be other mitzvahs that fall into that category. For example, this is not what he said as an example. I'll give you an example from my mind. Chesed, the mitzvah of Yahavta Rechemov, love your neighbors yourself. There's a mitzvah, so subcategory is consoling mourners, and there's a mitzvah to bikocholim, to visit the sick. So each mitzvah will have subcategories. Returning lost property perhaps falls under that category. And each different area of Torah will have subcategories, and then they will have their own halakhas, and it will break down. So that's the way the Torah is made. You have a trunk with branches, with sub-branches. And the question is, what is the trunk? What is the trunk of the tree? What is the trunk that everything else comes from? If you think of the word eitz, the word for tree in Hebrew is an eitz. That ayin, tzaddik. If you think of, if I had a board, I would write ayin, like this, and then tzaddik. And it actually looks like a tree. It actually does. You've got this one long thing with the two things, and then another thing with two things. It looks like a trunk with branches coming out of it. The word eitz. Ayin tzaddik. The letters are ayin tzaddik. Ayin is to look into something. Ayin tzaddik. You're looking at a tzaddik when you see a tree. When you see a trunk with these branches, you're looking at a tzaddik. Why? So, what is this trunk? What is this trunk that tzaddik is this trunk with these branches? What is this trunk?
Base.
Sorry?
The base.
It is the base. So, Rambam. Rambam takes all the mitzvahs in the Torah and he puts them in a conceptual order. He puts in an order, a logical order, and he starts with the first mitzvah and he says, Yesod ha-yesodos, I can't remember exactly the word in Hebrew. This is the foundation of all foundation. This is the pillar upon which everything else comes from. And what's the mitzvah? Amuna. Amuna means a knowledge of God, an awareness of God. There's hashkacha, that he guides our life. He's all powerful and he cares about us and he's taking us somewhere. That's amuna. But it's not information knowledge. Like if I tell my son, don't touch the oven, my young son, if I would test him, can you touch the oven? No. I might tell him, because it's hot. Can you touch the oven? No. Why? Because it's hot. 100%. Then he's going to go and touch the oven. And he's going to go, ah! At that moment when he goes, ow, that information knowledge that was cerebral suddenly becomes visceral. It becomes what we call da'at. It connects a knowledge which flows through our veins, which is connected to us. The mitzvah of to know there's a God, Rambam says, he used the word da'at. It has to be visceral. It has to flow through us. We have to be so real with this understanding, with this knowledge, that we know that right here, right now, Hashem, is in existence, he's listening to us, he's with us, he cares about us, he loves us, he's directing us. That's the trunk. That visceral knowledge that there's a God is every mitzvah connects to that. That's why it's the trunk of a tzaddik. That everything, every tzaddik at the very core, the very foundation is going to be a visceral knowledge that there's a God and everything that it means. That's the trunk of the Torah. Every mitzvah comes from that. And when a person has, this is the point, when a person has a visceral knowledge of God, I use an example. This is from the book that of Sharon Bitfiller. If a person's on a ladder and it's shaky and maybe it's windy and a person's worried they're going to fall from the ladder because they're quite high up and they're worried they're going to hurt themselves, and they see someone down there, they see someone down on the ground, are they going to think, oh, I'm going to fall? I hope that they do something. Or they're going to say, could you please hold the ladder? What would they do? If they're real, if they're real with the fact there's a guy down there, they're not going to think, oh, I hope they do something. If you know there's a guy down there, that there's no reason why he wouldn't hold the ladder, he doesn't want to do you bad, he wants to help, you know, then you talk to him, then you articulate yourself to him, you wouldn't hope. That's when a person has a muna, when they have a visceral knowledge that there's a God right here, right now, at every point in our lives, in every place, in every scenario, directing us. And he's given us our scenarios, and he wants us to talk to him, and he's listening. If the more real a person is with that, the more they'll realize, then I'm going to tell God my scenario here. Hashem, please can you help me? Because I know that there's a God, and he cares about me, and he can help me. And he's operating the world in such a way that he's giving me a mitzvah to talk to him rather than just doing things before I ask. If I'm aware, if I have a clarity of Hashem, and I'm real with that, then I will speak to Hashem. And Bitsur is nothing more than, from as I understand it, having this visceral knowledge of Hashem. When I say it, like real clarity that Hashem is real, he's with me, he cares about me, and I can ask him to help me when I have a need. That's the first category of tefillah. And it seems so obvious. And yet this guy in the car that I was with, he was saying, I really hope things improve. And I realized that it isn't taught. This is we're going to go through all sorts of different facets of tefillah in all different situations and how to use tefillah. But the first step is, looking at the time, The first step is having this clarity. There's a God, cares about me. He's involved. There's hashkaka pratit. He's guiding my life. He's setting up my scenarios that I'm in. Sometimes I've been challenging scenarios. He gave them to me, and he makes it like he doesn't know, and he wants me to talk to him. And if I'm real with the fact that he exists, then I'll do that. And that's Bitsu. That's the first one. Yes. The tree.
Yeah. What is it?
No, so all I'm saying is that the trunk of the tree is the mitzvah of the. It's the first of the Ten Commandments. Which is a mitzvah to have a visceral knowledge of God and to know that Hashem is guiding us and directing us. And the way that's connected to this mitzvah is you can't have this aspect. Sorry, the way it's connected to this aspect of tefillah of prayer is you can't. This aspect of tefillah really rests on the knowledge that Hashem is real and with you and is waiting for you to talk to him. And to the extent that you have a muna, that you have a real knowledge of God, then just like someone who sees that the ladder is going to fall, they'll call down and speak to someone. So too, if you're real with the fact that there's a God, you'll articulate yourself to them, to God. And so the branches. So I'm just saying that once you have a muna, everything else, all the other facets of the Torah stem from that. But I'm just saying that really, all of the Torah really is founded on this one idea that we have a clarity and a knowledge of God, and all the other branches anyway help us to grow in that one area.
You can't have branches if you don't have the trunk.
Right. That is true. There was a doctor. There was a doctor that usually this doctor works in a hospital on shift with another doctor. And that night the other doctor was sick and he wasn't able to come. And upstairs on the floor of the ward above, they said, if you really can't cope, just call up and we'll send someone to help you. But he thought, okay, let's see what I can do. And he was running around, tending to this one and that one and checking. And that night someone in his ward died. And it's a true story, and he was sued. He was prosecuted for negligence because someone died on his shift. Did he win or lose? He lost. He lost the case. Why did he lose? He could have called out for help. And that's the point. We're given scenarios. Hashem's waiting for us to call out for help. Not wait, not hope. We need to call out for help. That's Bitsur. Any scenario we're in that we're having a hard time with, call out for help. Hashem's waiting for us to approach him and to say, I've got a scenario here. Now there's ways to present our prayers sometimes. We'll get to that. But this is Bitsur. I just want to ask you, have I presented it in a clear way? Okay. One of my teachers, Reb Berkowitz, I used to talk with him, and his parents were Holocaust survivors. And I used to talk to him about a little bit about the olden days in Poland and Russia, and like just from memories from his parents, and he used to say that in the olden days, that the Jewish women, this is what he said, they used to just daven all day, Hashem, please help my son go to school safely, and he should learn well, and he should come back, and the cow should be healthy, and the cossack should stay away, and the panasa should keep flowing, and it's just that, when a person has a tangible, visceral knowledge of God, and they know that God is there, but Hashem won't operate until they speak, they'll speak, they'll ask. That's how the Jewish women, that's from Reb Berkowitz, he used to speak about that sometimes, and that's our power. I just say one more thing. When I was living in Eretz Israel in yeshiva, so the yeshiva I was in had a tall building, and I was in the penthouse room. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity, and I had a flat roof that had a panoramic room view over the entire Jerusalem onto the Kotel, the Temple Mount. It was very, very beautiful. So there was a period of time I would go upstairs, and I would, at night time, with a lot of stars, and it was very pretty, I would try and talk to God. And it was a bit weird at first. It was a bit weird, but I would try and do it. I would try and talk to God every single night for a period of time. And one day, after doing this for a while, I was standing there, I can't remember, Shachrit or Mincha, and I was saying the words, and I suddenly realized, now I know who I'm talking to. Because you just say the words in a siddur, I'm like, okay, bow at this point and say this. Suddenly, God had become real, because I'm talking to him every single night. And suddenly realized, okay, however, that's God, and just as if a person has a munah, but just a person has a real knowledge of God, it'll motivate them to talk to him. So too, talking to God, it strengthens one's munah. The more a person does this, and more a person gets into the habit of doing it, it strengthens their munah, and it's a positive flow. So I'm going to leave you with one question, okay? Because I think that all of these types of prayer are incredibly practical, and can be applied. For you to ask yourselves, you can ask yourself this question. When in my life, in my day, can I take time out and talk to God? Or what kind of things do I need to talk to God about? If a person can schedule it in, that's great, because then it's more likely to be consistent. But what do I need to talk to God about? Not just hope. Is it a relationship or a financial thing or a health thing or a hope that I have, or a dream that I have, or a fear that I have. If a person can ask themselves those questions and think, you know, then they're aware of their needs, and if they realize that's the scenario Hashem set up for me, and He's waiting for me to talk. There's a question that wasn't asked because I'm talking, and I feel that most people just feel that they're listening, and that's and I'm okay with questions, but the question would have been if we only get things. Remember I said at the beginning we only get things if they're prayed for, which is a real principle in Torah. Okay. That we have to open up that attic and then things can come down, and this is one of those ways. If that's the case, well, gee, there's a lot of things I haven't prayed for that I'm getting. Did it cross through anyone's mind, that question? Okay, there's a lot of things Okay. So it happens to be that we are getting a lot of things that aren't being prayed for by us, perhaps. One potential answer is that there are hundreds of thousands of Jews every single day davening the Shemona Esrei, for example, which is in plural. And when they're asking for parnasa, for financial sustenance for themselves, they're asking for everyone. And when they're asking for health, they're asking for everyone. And all these things are being prayed for. Okay, all these things are being prayed for on a general level, and we are getting a lot of things. But sometimes Hashem sets up a scenario that there will be things, because what was that quote I said that was really good? That's is trouble to get you into prayer. Thank you. There we go. Thank you. Okay. And we are getting so many brachas every single day. We really are. But Hashem sets up our life in such a way that He will hold things back. And He will set up our lives in scenarios that we need Him. And part of that is so that we will turn to Him and we'll start to develop our relationship with Him. And as we go through these different facets of tefillah, we will see that there are certain facets that when you put them together, they will change your perception and relationship with Hashem in the most amazing way. So much so, a person would actually thank their lucky stars that they had the sorrow, the difficulty that they had. I say that, obviously, there are some sorrows that you know that.
So what about when you try to start a relationship with Hashem?
Okay. So Be'ezrat Hashem will get to all of these questions, and that's an important question. But there's a very... You should just know there's an answer to that question in the Sefer that is very, very beautiful, and we'll get there. So that's for now, for tonight, part one. Next week, part two will be three different ways. And Be'ezrat Hashem will really grow through this series. Okay.